Welcome to the Casual Temple Podcast. This is episode 23, and I am your host, Marilee Duffy. At the Casual Temple, we're not just casual observers. We're seekers, explorers, and believers. Our mission is to unravel the threads that connect us to the unseen world of spirit and how that empowers us to know our true selves. But before we embark, a little favor, hit that heart-shaped like button and follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Today, we delve into the profound world of Buddhism with author Joe Singleton, who has penned the book Mara Dawn, Buddha Rise, The Awakening. Joe takes us on a tour discussing the concept of Dharma in Buddhism as an enlightening way to contemplate and practice life. We'll delve into the concept of impermanence, which is central to Dharma, and discuss the importance of authenticity and self-knowledge. Join us as we explore the path to self-realization, recognizing that we are both the source and solution to our problems. So sit back, relax, and let's embark on this journey together on the Casual Temple. Oh, welcome to the Casual Temple. This week, we welcome Joe Singleton, who's our guest today. Joe is multi-talented. He's an author, editor, publisher, tarot card spinner, rock hound, and lapidary artist. He's also the co-owner of The Local Stone, a crystal tarot and chakra jewelry boutique in Galveston, Texas. Joe's literary journey spans from exploring existential philosophy to venturing into the spiritual realms of the Buddhaverse, all in pursuit of the ancient wisdom of know thyself. Joe, I'm so happy to have you on the Casual Temple.
Thank you, Marilee. I'm super happy to be here. Let's have some fun tonight.
Yeah, me too. And I know we're definitely going to talk about your book. You were so kind and you sent me a copy of it. It's really wonderful. I had a chance to read it all in one day. It's such a great, my takeaway from it, kind of an overview, is it's a great introduction to the concepts of like Eastern Buddhism and like kind of philosophy in modern philosophy. Mixed in, you drop some philosopher names in there, which is cool, and do some comparisons. So, and I think it's just like a really nice conversational style. I feel like it's like I'm sitting next to you and we're kind of having tea and you're just kind of telling me all about like your thoughts on Eastern Buddhism. So it was very cool.
Well, I love to hear you say that because that were exactly my intentions with the book. And it's mm-hmm. it's music to my ears as an author. You know, when you work on a book, it's a long, hard, lonely journey road.
Yeah.
And to hear I've had a few reviews. The book just got published, right? Mm-hmm. And people have said that, you know, they're reading it in a day and it's opening some minds to some new things and things like that. And that's what I've always been about. You know, my background is in philosophy. Mm-hmm. And I was on a project, you know, that as an editor, and the whole goal of that was to help people understand philosophy that don't want to read thousands and thousands of dry words and academic styles. So mm-hmm. I like to think that I did all that hard work and I'm just trying to make it easy to bring out. So that's beautiful to hear you say that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. I'm so happy that you made the effort and you wrote it, and it is such a big undertaking, and congratulations. So that's really cool. So kind of how, you know, we're definitely going to talk about your book because there's a lot of really cool stuff in there, but mm-hmm. just to kind of get the audience sort of acclimated to who you are, we tend to kind of talk about sort of a little bit of background on you, kind of like giving us an idea of who you are and like what were sort of the events that led to you writing the book, really, that you could pinpoint.
Very cool. Well, that is a long and winding road story, and I'll encapsulate it. Okay. I like to say it's been 3 years of intense writing and research in the book and 57 years of living to get there. So it's, you know, I would have to say it started, I grew up in the MTV generation back in the 80s, right? And one night, probably I was around 14 years old, and I was watching a show called Monterey Pop, which was it's a movie about an old festival in the late 60s with the Rolling Stones and all that. And it ended up with The Who, right? And I ended up seeing, it ends with Pete Townsend of The Who smashing his guitar and there's drums rolling and you see The Who. And when I was 14, I said, that's what I want to do. I want to smash my guitar. I want to be a rock star. So yes. It all started out really wanting to be a rock star. And you know where that takes you down, you know, through the 80s and through the 90s. And I played music for a long time. And then, rock star didn't work out. Wife, house, baby came along. And I spent 30 years in corporate America in healthcare technology sales and things like that. Raised in a great son who went off to UT and got a degree and did great things. And then, you know, a few years ago, everything kind of changed, you know. Empty Nest came along and you know, I found myself kind of free, fresh, and with time to write, I guess you could say, right? And I packed up all my stuff, moved out of Houston, bought me a boat and moved to Galveston. I was going to fish my life away. But I started writing. I had time to write and really got back into a lot of the old, you know, who I was back when I was, you know, 18, 19, 20, back in my kind of artistic exploratory days. So I always kind of considered myself an artist trapped in a corporate, person's mindset, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I used to dabble in things like the tarot and the occult and stuff like that. And, you know, I was able to kind of pick up on some of that stuff. I got back into reading tarot cards, you know, and all that. And then very fortunately, in my mid-40s, I went back to college at UHD. I had a great professor there that I really liked. I studied a lot of existential philosophy. And then years later, about 4 or 5 years ago, she knew I was a tarot card reader, and she actually invited me to be an associate editor on her book. It was a book called Philosophy Wise. It's bringing 22 of the greatest philosophers of all time into kind of simple, easy, kind of what I tried to do with this book. And she made a tarot deck with that, right? A philosopher's tarot deck. So I got to see her write, publish, and what it goes through a book. And I said, you know what? I need to do that for myself. And one of my jobs doing that was to track down all of her footnotes and things like that. I heard some of your podcasts. I know you like to go down footnote rabbit holes, and I was down the ultimate one. And there was this book she had used. The Buddha was one of the philosophers that she used in there. And there was a book by a guy named Rahul Apollo who wrote a book called What the Buddha Taught. Very simple little book. And I kept seeing these quotes from there. I said, that's a cool book. Bought it, read it. And this is kind of a mystical experience, right? This is how things just kind of bubble up in the universe. And you know, I started really getting into that book. It's really just a treatise on the Dhammapada, which is the words of the Buddha, right? Kind of like in the Bible, you have the red letters, you got all this junk, and then you got the red letters of what Jesus said, which is really cool stuff. You know, mm-hmm. It's kind of the same thing. That's what the Dhammapada is. It's the words of the Buddha. And this is the origination of Dharma, you know, and it really lit a fire in me that said, I'm going to write a book about this. I picked out about 8 or 10 quotes I knew that I really wanted to use. And then I found the karmic wheel of life, which really all came together. So it's been a long journey. You know, I've done a lot of things. I've written a lot of books that will never get read. And finally, you know, I have this theory that you have to really live some life and have some experience instead of trying to writing about something I thought life should be or what I thought somebody would like to read. You know, I finally had something inside me that was true and honest. When you get that, that's a beautiful thing. And that's the origination of this book. And it's a beautiful thing.
Definitely you can see sort of the culmination of your passion about the subjects that you write about, and what a cool story though. And you talk about being sort of MTV generation. I'm like the last, I think one of the last years of like Gen X or whatever, and so I'm kind of like I'm like, oh, MTV.
Yeah. It was very cool in the beginning, and then you know, it turned into a bunch of soap operas. So, you know, and then I kind of forgot, you know, a really huge part of that, you know, I'm a jeweler as well. And through that process, I've reconnected with somebody I had been in love with a very long time ago. And we've gotten together and started this jewelry business where we go out and we actually pick stones and crystals out of the earth. And then we bring them back here. We cut them, grind them, shine them, wrap them in sterling silver and sell jewelry. It's kind of an alchemical process that, you know, just kind of happens with a lot of things. So there's really a lot of things coming together for me late in life. I'm a late bloomer. So I'm one of those who enjoys and invites aging because that's wisdom, right? You know, I really wasn't ready until now, and I've got, you know, I feel like I've got 10 or 15 books in me, you know, to go. So it's kind of the beginning of a new journey. It's an awesome thing.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Just definitely into all sorts of really cool things. And, wow. Yeah. Thank you for taking us down that road of your life. That was very cool. Yes. So I know you did talk about you talked about the karmic wheel of life, and I know that's like a big obviously it's like a big centerpiece sort of to your book, but can you kind of give us like sort of like what inspired you to kind of write about that piece? And then
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's really the spark of everything that this book came together. As I started, like I said, I had 8 or 10 quotes I knew I wanted to use from the Buddha, from the Dhammapada, but I started doing research into more modern thinkers on Buddhism and some of the old bodhisattvas and things like that. And I came across this karmic wheel of life. And there's actually a little neat little book out there. It's a quick, easy read written by the Dalai Lama. It's called The Wheel of Life, or The Karmic Wheel of Life. And it describes this. It's kind of like a mandala. You have a horoscope kind of wheel mandala behind you. It's the same kind of thing, where, from what I understand, the Buddhist monks back in the day, they would go into their cave or their monastery or whatever to be, clear in their thoughts and away from all of the rabble of the world, right? So they would put this mandala on the outside for the common folks, the us people who, and look at it and meditate on it. And it really is a, in Western terms, we can look at it as something almost like Dante's Inferno, right? Where you had these, where you travel up on these different sets of existences. This big wheel, it has a big kind of devilish looking guy around it. That's Mara, right? And on the inside, you have these, they have these levels of like what's called a hell being or a hungry ghost or a demigods and gods. And it's kind of that ladder of, existence that we climb on this karmic wheel. In the very center is what really caught my eye. There's three characters in the middle. There is the a pig, which represents ignorance and greed, and it bites the tail of a peacock, which represents desire and envy, and the peacock bites the tail of a snake, which represents anger and spite, and the snake bites the tail of the pig, and they're going around in this circle like a hamster wheel in the middle, right? And this one line kind of came to me, which said, "I want to be just like you," and it's kind of, we get caught in our cycles of life as either kind of one or two positions. Either we're trying to be like, emulate somebody else, or once we get something, we want everybody to emulate us, right? And we're all kind of caught in this circle of all chasing the same thing over and over and over. And that was really a big, a vision for me, right? And it's really the spark that when that came together with some of the things I was coming with, I was like, that's the book right there. I've got two pictures in the book, and that's one of them, So it's a very important concept, and it's kind of a mandalic overview in one side of this thing we call samsara, right? Which is the world that we live in. And the idea overall, Buddhism is kind of a hard sell in the West because it's all about kind of letting things go, right? What are we trained and educated to do when we're young from growing up is acquire things, get as much as you can, right? This is the American way, this is the Western way. In truth, it's always, it crosses all cultural boundaries. And in a metaphorical sense, we are all kind of caught up in this wheel. The whole idea, what the Buddha did is, I went off of this wheel, right? The world doesn't make sense. It never has. It never will. If we can't change the world, then what we can change is ourselves, what's inside of us. So it's a really big picture and one mandala. It's hard to explain kind of all in that, but it was just one of those things that, I know you like to talk about mystical experience, and that really, well, I've had a million in my life. I could tell you, I could spend an hour talking about those, but that one was really big for me because it really opened my mind and encouraged me to dig farther and put this book together, which was kind of an awakening in itself, right? So that's a very cool thing. And anybody who's interested in that, or if that piques your imagination, hell beings and hungry ghosts and demigods and gods and all that, and the pig, the peacock, and all that in the middle, check out that book by the Dalai Lama. It's called The Wheel of Life. I think it's only 110 pages or something like that. But it was a real eye-opener for me. I'm also a tarot reader, right? And I find a lot of semblance between the, wheels are a big deal with me, right? The Wheel of Fortune, right? And the tarot. In the old, if you go back to the 1400s, the Visconti deck, which is the farthest deck they can trace back, the old Wheel of Fortune had kind of a guy in a noble spot at the top, and then a guy falling from grace and a beggar at the bottom and then a guy climbing his way to the top back to that. And it's just this big circle that goes around. So it ties in with a lot of things. It's universal. And like I say, I really believe it crosses all cultural boundaries, whether you're in Beijing, China, or here in the USA, or in Mexico, or wherever you are. We all suffer the human condition together, right? So That's kind of what it is in a nutshell, but it was really big for me.
These concepts, like I'm kind of familiar with these concepts, right? Just by kind of existing. But they weren't like super like forward in my mind to where I understood it, but I'm so glad that in your book, you kind of pull out these kind of bigger pieces to kind of talk about. You definitely go through who Mara is and Samsara and talk about the peacock and all of that. So it kind of gives you a really good grasp of it. So now I feel like I'm a little more knowledgeable. I thank you for that. And something that was very interesting too. Now I know that, you know, your book is, we want to save some things for the book, but I'm curious about, how you described Dharma, because it, my current practice is I look at a lot of like Jewish mysticism. I study the Kabbalah. So the Dharma was like really piqued my interest. And so how would you describe Dharma?
Man, that is a fabulous question and a huge encompassing question. And Once again, one of my things is I try to make things simple, right? And it's, in essence, it's two things. First, it's a source of enlightenment, right? It's something that you can, when found, can really open your mind to new things, right? Second, it's a way of life. Once found and realized, it becomes a new kind of way of life to find what I call, how many times did I say peace, freedom, and happiness in the book? Probably way too many times, but that's the goal. Is we all want to find our peace, freedom, and happiness, right? We can, one of the things I tried to relay in the book was we do these things, whatever our job is or this or that. And we kind of have this distant thought in our minds of, oh, if only one day, you know, that I could get here, achieve this, and everything will be easy and free, right? That's that kind of that distant, far off dream that we all have. That, and you know what anxiety really is the not really our ability. Just it seems to be always unobtainable. You know, we get it just stays in that background. Kind of finding that Dharma is a realization of, you know, finding what that is and bringing yourself closer to it, and that in itself is an awakening thing, right? It goes back to, I wish I would have put this in a book, but I put this all on one page. If anybody wants this, scribeworkspublishing@gmail.com. I'm happy to send it to you. But it starts out with the three jewels of Buddha, right? The three jewels of Buddha, the Buddha himself, right? That's kind of that symbol for realization. You know, I was never into Buddhist or Buddha, you know, I would, like many in the West, I had a very negative connotation of Buddhism growing. You know, I grew up in more of a Christian kind of mindset. And you always look at that and it's kind of weird, but one thing you can do, you can see a talisman or a Buddha somewhere, there's just something very peaceful about it, right? He's always just kind of sitting there and it's this peaceful thing. That's that kind of thing that draws you in. That's more of that enlightenment process, right? The second jewel, so the three jewels of Buddha are the Buddha. Number two is the Dharma. That's right. When we find the Dharma and we open our minds to these things, which we'll talk about here in a little bit, that's kind of the way, right? That's the way between. And three is what we call the Sangha. That's kind of finding what I call our Dharma bubble or our Dharma vehicle or our own kind of space, right, where we can clear all of the BS of the world out and breathe and kind of operate in our own space. Sangha goes back. It's a term where it's really a group of monks living in a certain community, you know, just with their, what they're into, right? Their meditation, their peace and all of this kind of stuff. In our kind of lives, I translate it, you know, we're all not, you know, Buddhists in saffron robes sitting in the way. It's very different, right? We have to live our lives. We have our jobs and things like that. So I'd like to say we find our Dharma bubble, right? Our kind of our own personal little nirvana, you could say, right? So that's kind of the that's what Dharma is. It's kind of an all-encompassing, it's a way to think about life and practice life that is very enlightening.
Mm-hmm.
You could ask that to 1,000 different people and you might get 1,000 answers, but you know, that's mine. It's a source of enlightenment and a new way to live if that's what you seek.
Yeah, very cool.
Does that make sense to you?
Oh yeah, for sure. I was, you know, especially when you described it as a vehicle or like mm-hmm. the Dharma bubbles and the vehicles and, and like I said, I'm looking at Jewish mysticism and the Kabbalah mm-hmm. and they talk, there's a lot about the Merkaba, right? The Merkaba sort of being that vehicle. And it's pretty much, you can come at me, Jewish mystics, if I get anything wrong, that's fine.
It's the same thing in a different language.
Very
Mary.
Similar.
That's what there's a big term in Buddhism, which is called the great vehicle, right? All of the great bodhisattvas over time and all that. It's like this wheel. It's always there, right? The wheel of Dharma is always spinning. The wheel of enlightenment is always there. 99.9% of it never see it and we miss it. But when you find it and you jump in on that, then you're in it, right? You're in the great vehicle. And this is understanding that we're not just here for 100 years and we do this or that, that this is an extensive, transient, transcendent kind of nature of ascension. It's a very big thing and a very big concept. And I believe the vehicle you're in mysticism is the same thing, just, you know, in different terms, as many ways to God, right?
Yeah, for sure. And I'm always like very, I'm like, oh, wow. Yeah. Cause like all the different systems, they have kind of similar, very similar concepts. And so I was like, wow, I learned a new thing about Dharma and that's cool. So I appreciate you. Yeah. and there's something really cool that you said, about sort of, I guess kind of when you talk about clearing the space, but you said that we as humans, are always seeking permanence out of impermanent things. Can you tell us about that?
Impermanence is really, it's impermanence is what Dharma is based on, right? You'll see a lot of, you know, if you look into anything, probably the first thing you'll see if you go on TikTok or look at Buddhism or whatever, something that's talked about very much is called the Four Noble Truths, right? Those are, and that's on my sheet here. The Four Noble Truths are that we all suffer the human condition together. You know, we can, I challenge anybody, if you look back on your life, we like to think everything's beautiful and all this stuff, but it's a lot more suffering than, we get a little bit of good stuff and a lot of hard work and, so we all suffer together. Second is that all things pass, right? The third is that suffering itself passes too. The fourth is that mindfulness and understanding that all things pass. So this understanding, a lot of times, right, we get caught up in these kind of what I call like a trap, right? Where we, you know, my life is sucks. I'm stuck here. I'm this or that. You know, all things pass. There's a little metaphor I was thinking of the other day that I think is very cool. But anything from a bird, let's say, to a coin in your pocket, right? Think of you're outside and you see a beautiful bird come flying by, you know, and you're looking, it's a beautiful thing. It's becoming, right? It's coming into my vision in my life. And maybe it lights on a telephone pole or something like that. And you make eye contact with it. And it's kind of this cool thing, right? And then all of a sudden its attention goes and it flies away, right? So that's becoming, right? It arrives and it flies away. A coin in your pocket, right? I do work a month or 2 weeks ago in anticipation, hard work with my hands so that I'll get a paycheck, right? The paycheck hits the bank account. It arrives, right? And then I got some coins in my pocket and I see some shoes or a record or a book or whatever. And I want to buy that and I have to part with that. That's a minor form of suffering, right? Letting go of that, but you get something back. If you magnify that into bigger things like house, job, family, you know, mortality, right? All things come, all things arrive, and all things pass. And we tend to think, you know, that we want to make things permanent in our life, you know, and we kind of push this passing thing away, right? We don't like to think about death or the end of this or like getting married, you know, with a divorce, you know, that this stuff happens, right? And this can either be a devastating thing that wrecks you for the rest of your life, or you just understand that from the smallest thing is something you see, you know, fly by you, or a coin in your pocket, or somebody in your life, or whatever. All things run their course and path. And when we kind of put all three of those together and understand that they're all equally part of the experience, and there's something calming about that, right? I don't expect things to be permanent in my life, right? I've got a saying in the tarot, right, where this happens all the time. I do what's called a first house and second house tarot, and I say, you know, we all think, you know, I'm young, I'm gonna go to school, I'm gonna get my career, I'm gonna meet my mate, I'm gonna buy my house, we're gonna have kids, and we're gonna come grandma and grandpa, everything's gonna be great, and that's a life, right? 90% of the people I talk to in their 30s or 40s, what happens when you get all that stuff when you're 35, 36, 37, you look around, everything sucks, you know, this relationship sucks, or this house sucks, or whatever. This is not permanent, and that can cause a crisis, right? That causes anxiety, right? So we always got to know that something else is always coming, right? When we're open to that, it can make a huge difference in your life, from the smallest little thing to the biggest things. You know, all things must come to pass. So this kind of concept of impermanence, it's if there's one thing you've got to get, to kind of find the Dharma, that's the center of Dharma, right? Is that understanding that all things pass, right? Everything is in a state of coming, arriving, or going in our lives. And when you look at it from a kind of central psychological standpoint, how many things do you have going on in your life? Some of them are leaving, some of them are here, some of them are coming this way. And that's really what that big meditation at the end about. And that's all kind of tied into the chakras, right? The seven chakras. Is balancing all that stuff and understanding that, yes, one day this will leave. You know, if I'm meditating on my root chakra, right, what grounds me, you know, and so there's some things I've got going on in my life that are very ungrounding, but I know they go, you know, and everything comes around. And we think back on our lives, devastating things, good things that have happened or whatever, it always seems to work out, doesn't it? We always fear the worst. Like we think the worst is going to happen, but rarely does the worst thing ever happen, right? We worry 90% about stuff that probably never will happen. That's a big part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. It was definitely like a really good thing for me to meditate on and think about. And yeah, you're right. I used to have like catastrophizing. I think it was like a thing where I was like worrying about so many things in the future and exactly what you said. And then I realized like, oh my gosh, like I spent all that time worrying and like 98% of the time, the thing I worried, it didn't come true. So
yeah, this is huge. I mean, I'm telling you, this is really what it's all about is, and that all comes down to, and we get into some real deep stuff in the book, right? Which is understanding that all there really is right now, right? The past is a ghost, and the future is just like a what I call a haunt, right? It hasn't happened yet, but it often haunts us. That there's something in the book I call the 30% rule, right? We're happy 33% of the time, where, you know, we're kind of somewhere in the middle 33% of the time, and 33% of that becoming, arriving, and leaving part, right? That's 30% of it, right? And if we don't give our due to that 30%, that 30% becomes a hindrance to 98% of our life. It's like an equation, right? The smallest fear of the little thing. What I find in the tarot a lot is little things that are stopping somebody from becoming what the, you know, what this whole book is really about is what my heart tells me to do, but I don't allow it to do because I've got to do the X, Y, and Z, right? What the world tells me I have to do. And that's a big thing. That's a big step for anybody. That's what this book is all about. You know, we're all in the same boat. This is the human condition, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah, definitely. Well explained and great examples. So thank you for that. There's also another concept, and I'm very big on it. So I'm going to quote you. It's like kind of the reason I even started this podcast, but So another concept you said was all true answers rest within ourselves. So what does that mean to you?
Indeed, that's the core and essence of my journey. It's the core and essence of this book and everything. Apollo, right? Let's go back to Greek mythology. Apollo, who you do a lot of reading and research on magic and alchemy and all of that stuff. Apollo is the same person as Hermes, right? Who is the same person as Thoth, right? The winged god, Mercury, right? Messenger of the gods, scribe of the gods. Apollo went on a journey. He was a seeker, right? And his, like many of us who travel these spiritual realms, we want to know what that one question, what is that one special question? What is the meaning? What is the purpose? What is the essence of life? Well, Apollo had many means, and he went on this big journey, and where he ended up was the Oracle at Delphi, right? That these were kind of like the three witches who were boiling the stuff, and they would tell, you know, they would say to the king, you're going to win this battle, or you're going to lose. You know, these were big decisions were relied on the Oracle at Delphi, right? This is the ultimate oracle. And what he found there was the answer to it, and it was simply two words. It was know thyself, right? We let the world define us, Marilee. We're from the minute we're born. You know, the book starts out with a baby being born and talking about reincarnation and this thing about Mara and Samsara. You know, where it's a world where, you know, the sin of any author is to lose your audience in the first 30 pages. The first part of this book paints a very dark picture of this world, but really, the way it's set up, you know, forwards is backwards. We want, you know, we all wonder, like, no matter what side of the fence you fit on, if you're into politics, it's like, how do these people get in? You know, how is these people? These are the dumbest people. I mean, can't they see? You know, so the world kind of turns us backwards and turns us around. Down here in the South, I don't know y'all have in the Pacific Northwest, but at birthday parties when we're kids, we have what's called a piñata, right? It's a little animal or something filled with candy, and they put a blindfold and turn you around, and you're holding a bat and you're swinging at nothing and all that. That's kind of how we are dropped into this world, right? The term know thyself, or that kind of thing, is to bypass what we have in there, the five hindrances of skepticism, right? The world teaches this is how the world is, kind of opening our mind and opening our minds to ourselves, finding out who we really are inside. That's the key to finding whether it be God or whatever you're looking for. The key lies inside of us. In Buddhism, there's it's called the seed of Tathagatagarbha. Now, that's a long word for what some people call the seed of Buddha, right? It's that little light within us. It's a seed within us. Once we find it, we cultivate it like a garden. Cultivate that seed. When you light that up, that's Dharma, right? That opens up, and it's self-enlightenment. Right? Mm-hmm. Finding our path. I know I talk about the tarot a lot, but there's so many what the tarot reveals is what's inside that people really feel, what your heart really tells you. Opening that up and opening that up into the world, finding your experience, whether you be artistic or whatever your art is. We're all artists in one way or another, right? Mm-hmm. Finding that art. Who am I? What is my essence? Opening that up and becoming that, right? That is to know thyself. It's enlightenment. It's wisdom. It takes sometimes years, 57 years to find. So, you know, a lot of digging and footnotes and books that you'll never read, but they're all on your bookshelf, you know, and you read a few pages and it threw you over here, right? It's kind of that journey that we take and I find that there's a whole universe within ourselves, right? And opening up that universe is a huge, huge deal. That's the best way I can say to know thyself.
Perfect. Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. It's definitely something has been central in sort of what I personally practice. And then what I'm hoping to do for people like listeners is to know yourself. Like a path to that is maybe, you know, going down the path of, Eastern philosophy and Buddha that kind of help you kind of orient yourself. But even like the small things, like know thyself, like I told my husband the other day, it was something like, I know that I'm not, I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was something like, oh, I know I'm not going to do that. Whatever. Like it was like an activity. I was like, I know I'm not going to do that. So I'm going to need to pay somebody else to do it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I know I'm never going to do it. I will just pay somebody to do it or whatever the thing was. So not and pretend it, that I can.
In a way, it goes back to kind of that big idea from that, the pig shape biting the pig and all that, which is, you know, I that thought was, I want you to be just like me, or I want, you know, we just need to be us, right? That's what we're so caught up with what everybody else, what we're supposed to do, that we don't find ourselves, right? We're not our true authenticity, right? This is a big word in philosophy, authenticity, finding our authentic self. That, beautiful. You taught me something tonight. That's to know thyself, is to find your authenticity. A lot of writers like Jean-Paul Sartre, Simone de Beauvoir, a lot of the existential philosophy talks about authenticity, right? Breaking out of the mold that the world puts us in and kind of coming out of our shell and becoming who we are. It can be a huge thing. That is the awakening. You know, the awakening starts now when you find that. It's a beautiful thing.
A lot of that, yeah, for sure. And a lot of it is shedding sort of exactly how you explained it, is like shedding the things you are not, right? To get to the things you are. And sometimes that's scary because you're like, oh, I thought I was a rock star. I thought I was, you know, like I thought I was going to do that.
Shedding that, it's like an onion, right? Another way that has been described is the peeling of the onion, right? Where's the center of the onion? There's layer and there's layer and there's layer. It's almost like a transcendent eternal onion, right, that we're unpeeling. The cool thing about Dharma, I was thinking about that today. I'm already thinking about volume two of this series, which there are actually some things are changing, because enlightening just builds upon itself the deeper that you go.
Right.
And I don't think there's really ever any end to it. I think that's why we're here, right? You know, Descartes said a long time ago in the 1500s, I think, therefore I am. And I've been in a lot of philosophy. They almost could have shut the book right there and that's it. You know, that's all we can really know, right? I am a thinking thing. And beyond that, I don't know. Everything's electric, right? We're electrically charged. Our every vision we see, it's like a projector, you know. I was thinking today, you look in one of those old projectors, it's like a bright light. I was looking at the sun today. It's kind of like that, isn't it? You know, we could be looking into a projector. That goes into, like, you know, Socrates, the parable of the cave and all that kind of stuff. So it's an unfolding onion that we just find. You know, the more we enlighten ourselves, the more enlightened we become. Mm-hmm. And then hopefully we enlighten the world as well along with us.
Right. Yeah, beautiful. You've been brought in like Plato and the cave and everything. That's so cool.
Well, Socrates, right, that we talk about that. It's hard to, we really haven't talked about that first part of the book. And this is a hard thing. It was a hard thing for me to overcome. There's a few things in Buddhist terminology and Dharma. And one of them is the word ignorance, right? And part of that kind of thing about samsara, we're trapped in this wheel that we just go over and over and over. It's a form of ignorance, right? It's non-enlightenment. Enlightenment is the unfolding of unenlightenment, right? Become from taking unenlightenment to enlightenment. That's enlightenment, right? This kind of track, Socrates, what, you know, way back in the day, I'm a big Socrates guy, right? You read Plato. I've got a book. It's about this thick of Plato's complete works. I think it's 1700 pages. I'll never finish it. I was stuck on one page for 3 years one time. You know, it took me that long to get past one page, right? But, you know, they had this contest back in the day, kind of back in the Apollo days, right? And it was, who's the best philosopher of them all? And they had a contest. Socrates was the winner. And they asked him to have like a little speech or something. And what he said, this is what Socrates is famous for. He said, I am only the wisest among us because I realize that I know nothing, right? And it sounds like, that's hard to comprehend, right? How can I know nothing and be the smartest guy? It took me a long time to figure that out. But if you read those dialogues, that's what, you know, somebody would tell me what good is. And they would start saying, well, it's somebody who has this and that, you know, and well, if it, What about a man who doesn't have this or doesn't have that? Does that mean he's not good? And he would turn them around until people just realize, you know, we really don't know what this world is, what we're doing and what our purpose is. 99.9% of us. So, you know, that's enlightenment, right? It's the unbinding of our ignorance, you know, and first accepting that, you know, maybe what I've thought all of my life is not the truth. Right. Mm-hmm. That can be a hard thing to face. That you just said, it can be a scary thing. Right. And that fear, that's what I was talking about. That little 5% of fear within us can stop us from doing so many things, right? From opening up our shell and becoming who we are. Mm-hmm. That's what Dharma becomes from us, right? It allows us to accept, in a way, our ignorance, right? Once I do that, I can't be enlightened before I first realize, wait, I've got a lot of enlightening to do in my life, right? So It's a huge thing to overcome, you know? Yeah. That's why I tried to make this as easy and readable as possible for Western minds, because we're not trained to think like that, right? We're trained to think that I need as much stuff, you know, everything we a house, a car, a this or that, everything we get is like a small form of bondage. And the more stuff we get, the more bound we are. Learning to let go of things can be very hard, but it can also be very freeing and enlightening.
Yep, that definitely hard for our Western minds. You got that down pat.
Especially this one, all of us. That's why my book, you say, sounds like a conversation. I love that, because everything is we, right? It's all, yeah. We're all suffering this stuff together. And just bringing a little bit closer, you know, every day or every week, I get a little bit closer, or I can let go of this a little bit more. And you know, I've got a saying, what do you got to lose? You know, I mean, I tell a lot of people in tarot readings, you know, when they're stuck on something and they know what it is, it always comes out what it is. And say, look, the answer is very simple. Either say no to something you always say yes to, or say yes to something you always say no to. Try it one time and see what happens, right?
Yeah.
And it can be that easy to overcome some really big things and find some really enlightening pathways in life. So letting go is a big deal.
Beautiful. Yeah. Definitely something I've learned recently that I keep, I don't want to call it jinxing, but I have to stop saying I'm never going to do that, because invariably, like a year later, I'm doing that thing I said I would never do.
Yes, exactly. And that's kind of our ignorance, right?
We
have this thought of, no, I would never do that. And that's why I talk about samsara is kind of this backwards world. Like Mara is like this ruler of this hermit kingdom. I describe him as like a shell game guy, right? And we take, you know, we take one step towards him and he takes one step back. He puts this shiny thing in front of us and we grab at it, right? And then that withers and gets old and we don't learn our lesson. It burns us, right? And then there's another one over here and we grab on that and we just keep grabbing. And nothing is ever the answer. I was thinking, if I could just, once I get to this level of my career, I'll have this.
Right.
I've been there. You know, I'll buy the boat. I can go fishing all I want. I bought a boat and I never went fishing, you know, and I was still like missing something, right? It's never the answer. And sometimes that just chase, it's like this eternal chase. We're all chasing it goes back to that pig, the peacock and the snake, you know, it's anger, it's spite, it's envy, it's desire. It's all of that together. We just kind of spin in this big circle, and really what the Dharma is all about, what the Buddha did and everything, that whole story is just letting it all go. Right. Ascension. That's ascension. You know,
yeah.
There are higher levels of ascension than this place that we live. You know, we all hold on to it so dearly. Mm-hmm. I think it's almost like a little preschool or so, you know, we got to get out of this and go up to the next level. Right. That's letting go. It's hard to do.
It is hard to do. Oh, yeah. But and then sort of in your, you kind of hit on some of the talking about some of the hindrances, right? And then sort of your meditations at the end of the book sort of kind of address that and assist with it. I've never heard of these before. So like, I don't know. I didn't know if you wanted to talk about the hindrances and the seven helpers.
But... I would love to. It's the perfect whole point of the book. And that's how there's, I don't know if you remember in the book towards the end, I put in big bold letters, read the Dhammapada exclamation point, yeah, right? It's yeah, all in there.
Yeah.
These are the words of the Buddha. This is what he said. And you know, it's what's cool about Dharma, it's very simple. Okay. Everything has its opposite or its counterbalancing feature, right? So he came up with these five hindrances, right? Which are kind of the five big ones that get us. They're lust, anger, laziness, skepticism, and angst, right? All of the things, those are those things that hold us back, right? That keep us from being our true or keep us chasing lust. You know, I've always got to have this, right? So I'm always chasing this. How much time have I wasted in my life chasing this thing that every time I get it, it doesn't really bring me anything. It wears out. And then I want to go get a new one and start over and do it again. Those are the five hindrances. The seven helpers are kind of the opposite of that: awareness, intelligence, energy, joy, calm, concentration, equanimity. So like a good thing for skepticism, right? We talked a little bit about skepticism tonight, that kind of thing, like the world keeps us kind of in this, you can't, you know, nothing. I talk a little bit in the book about where science ends, spirituality begins, and where spirituality ends, science begins. They never quite get together. Isn't this the old magical thing you live about? Science and religion, everybody wants to bring it together, but it never can seem, because science cannot see beyond the physical things, right? Mm-hmm. And in a way, spirituality can't really relate with the physical things. So you've got these two separate polarities, right?
Yeah.
So something like, you know, skepticism can be, you know, if I find myself, skepticism can be related to a specific chakra when we cycle through our chakras in our meditation. You know, the answer or the fix for skepticism can be intelligence, right? I can open my mind to something I've always believed is no. What if that was yes and I opened it? I used to have this one philosophy professor, and he's always so afraid to watch what you're saying there. That's not correct, or you've got to be correct in every. And I would tell him, look, I'm not afraid to be wrong, right? I'm throwing this idea out there. It may be stupid or whatever, but what does everybody else have to say? You know, maybe we can find something new here, whatever, like expanding or opening our minds a little bit. So it's just kind of a way to look at, hey, you know, when I look at something, some part of myself, inside, and if it's something that I feel that has me out of balance a little bit, I just find the counterbalancing thing for that, right? Like for lust, right, is energy. So, you know, if I'm lustful for clothes or shoes or for, you know, another person or whatever, I can redirect my energy. Speaking of the chakras, when we get that sacral chakra, that's our second chakra, right? It's probably the most complicated of all of them, because not only is it our romance and sexual, you know, urges, needs, and desires, but it's also our creative urges, needs, and desires. And it's mm-hmm. also our spiritual intuition. Think about all of those things, right? And this one, you can spend a lot of time, a lot of extra rounds on your sacral chakra, right? Mm-hmm. But if I'm, and I think anybody can attest to this at one point, I certainly can, is you can get caught up in lust in many ways, right? And it can take you to some dark places, right? No matter what you're doing, excessive amounts of lust are not a good thing in many circumstances, right? So I transfer that to creative energy, right? I transfer that energy to something creative. If I'm artistic, if I'm into, you know, whatever I'm into, if I'm into banking or playing the stock market or whatever, you know, I can transfer some of that over there, right, and balance myself out a little bit. Rather than a big difference between the Dharma and, say, like, you know, a Judeo-Christian religion, is we kind of, you know, we get in these foxhole situations. Oh, God, I've got to just get me out of this and we'll be okay, right, and putting hope on that. What I love about the Dharma, it's not like the Bible talks about these are sins, don't do it, right? And it pretty much ends there. Dharma says, okay, this is sin. These are the five hindrances, right? Lust, anger. These are what they are. this is where they can take you. And here's how to balance that, where we kind of, rather than having to put all of our hopes and whatever in something we're not even sure is out there or going to help us, you know, we can take charge of this ourselves. That's that seed of Dharma within. And Dharma, we are actually God within ourselves, right? When, if I want to see God, I look in the mirror. That's Dharma, right? That's understanding that we're like, you've heard this term, like we're one nerve in the finger of God out here in this physical world, right? If that's true, then that means we are God. God is within us, right? There's a line I have in the book. If we want to see God, we need to look in the mirror. If we want to see the devil, we need to look in the mirror, right? In essence, we're both, right? That's the yin yang. It's both forces are interactive with each other.
Yeah, beautiful.
Hopefully I didn't go too round a big rabbit hole there. But that was
No, that was great. I like that you, you know, kind of brought it back again to what we were talking about, sort of like know thyself, kind of know who you are. It's sort of like all kind of combined together. That's very cool. And I like sort of taking charge. I do feel like that's where people are going to go in the future as far as like their spiritual path. Obviously the, like you said, I feel like the bigger religions aren't having the hold that they have had, and people are seeking something new. And I think that is going to come from each individual to kind of, you know, find what resonates and work it out. So
this is the essence of samsara, right? This is the world we live in. It's our parents. It's our teachers. It's our educators. It's our boss. It's the president. It's whoever, right? It's we're conditioned, right, to these kind of this almost like matrix of this is the boundaries that you live in.
Yeah.
You can go a lot down a lot of rabbit holes and a lot of spiritual stuffs and paranormal stuff out there, but there's a lot of people are coming to this thought that we're almost bonded and we're almost kept, our souls are like in bondage for some reason that we really don't know, being used for something. You know, you can go down that line. I don't like to go that far out there. I like to stay right here within ourselves.
Yes.
But that's really what this book is all about, is unbinding all of those little chains that we can, and then just finding more peace, freedom, and happiness in the world. Mm-hmm. This is freedom, right? This is freedom. Freedom is liberation. Liberation is wisdom. Wisdom is enlightenment. It's a ladder, right? That we go up. And that's really what this is all about. And just being able to find that and kind of go on that journey. Just, you had asked, what is nirvana? You know, that is just stepping on that first step of the ladder and seeing that there's a much bigger world than I have thought. That's nirvana, because that opens up our minds just a millionfold, right? That's part of the answer to that question. I'm glad we kind of got there, because it's many things.
It is many things. And I like that you said change, because every time I, because I like the tarot as well. And like the double card, right, is one of my favorites.
15D, yeah. What are they? They're chained to this altar, right? It's one of my favorite cards.
Me too. Because
I call it the devil is a blocker. That card represents fear. Mm-hmm. You like the tarot, we should do a tarot show. Have all your friends over with wine and we'll be
I love it.
But that card I call a blocker, and that's overcoming your fear, right? That's that the emperor is one of those blockers, kind of the heavy man on that, right? Mm-hmm. The five card, the old pope, the hierophant, right? That's that kind of Catholic priest standing there. These are blockers. These are things that tell us thou shalt not, right? I got as a personal card the other day, the devil reversed, which is a beautiful thing, which means that's an unbinding, right? The overcoming of a fear, the coming into something new. So yes, I understand. I think that's where you're going. Hopefully I didn't interrupt you.
No, that was good. Card, that was it. But
yeah, it's that goes way back with me. I have the 15D, I call him. The devil is a friend of mine. So is Mara. Mara is the devil. And I talk about this in the book. We should not look at the devil as our enemy.
Yeah.
The devil is our friend. Like, this is what we have to overcome to find that enlightenment, right? He's there for a reason, to give us a bar that we have to jump over, right? that's that fear, releasing that fear, finding a way out of that chain, and putting trust in yourself instead of some force that's binding you down. That's liberation. That's peace, freedom, and happiness, right?
Yeah,
cool stuff
it is cool. Ugh, yeah, I love that you walked down the devil
with me. That's awesome. I spent a lot of time. I saw Aleister Crowley. I used to use the Crowley deck a long time ago. I saw him in a dream one time when I was about 19 or 20 years old, and it was not good. It was one of those, what do they call that when you're in bed and you can't move and you're like, you're completely powerless. I remember he said, look into the eyes of the devil at me in a dream. Right. And then I see, and there was something like, he's not ready. And then boom, I was out of it, but it was a very real thing. I just barely touch on dream yoga in the book. Volume two actually starts out with a dream yoga episode, a dream I had that was very powerful. It's the first four pages of the next book. And it's going to be something very cool. Dream yoga kind of takes what I talk about in the book. This is called meditation yoga, right? That's right. What this is. People think of yoga and I'm doing, stretching and all this stuff. Back in the day, with the Buddha, the Dharma, this is meditation. This is mind yoga, right? All these exercises, cycling through chakras and meditations, thinking about the hindrances and the helpers as they represent our chakras inside of us and maintaining balance. That's mental exercise, right? One of the things I try to get into, it took me for, I don't know if you meditate, but it took me forever to find people. Most people think meditation is going to a quiet place, dark, find a candle, close your eyes, and just, let the day go.
Right.
That meditation is more than, that's a little bit part of it, but it's about working on what's going on. And so once you get there, now I can organize my thoughts, right? That's the place where we organize our thoughts. Then we get to that third eye and crown and we can rest and be in all that stuff. But it's a bit of work, as yoga isn't stretching today. It's, back in the day, yoga was originally called yogam, which is, this is in the Bhagavad Gita, which is the practice of union with the science of the supreme. Think about that.
Awesome.
The science of the supreme. That's what we're talking about here.
It's
big stuff, man.
No little thing. Yeah.
No little thing. Yeah, no.
That's great. Yeah. Thank you for walking through that. Yeah, I do. I've been doing a Kundalini yoga practice and I'm very fortunate to have really good teachers and a community here in Seattle. And so it's very much something that, it's about the whole kind of the whole system as a human, right? Combining with the supreme. So that's cool.
And if you want to talk about that briefly, that's really what the book, that's the big finish of the book, right? Is the three breaths of the seven chakras meditation. So, as we go into our meditation, it's hard to, I don't know if you're a writer, but I thought, okay, I've got to write a mantra for a meditation. I've got it in my mind, but it's very hard to put in words what happens during a meditation, right? And it's that Kundalini snake, right? And that all up and down our spine, we start with the root chakra, right? These are the things that ground us. And then we cycle up to the sacral chakra, which we talked a lot about earlier, that kind of creative part of us. Then we go to a lot of people call the solar plexus. I call it the belly. That's where our will is, right? We think about our will, past, coming, arriving, all of that kind of stuff. The heart is kind of the central point between the crown and the root, right? That's where those two things meet. These lower things are kind of our grounding principles. Then we get the heart, which is our courage and our compassion. People think it's love. It's a love, not so much love, but the heart is a lot about courage. That's our will to be able to overcome. In dream, they talk about fearless heart, right? To be able to overcome these boundaries that constantly stop us, right? That's where our courage and our compassion come in. Then we go to our throat. This is where, I don't know if you read it in the book, but I have to really ease up to the throat because, I've kind of been known for having a big mouth for a long, you be careful what you say, right? This is probably more than anything, learning all of this is more for me because what we say to the world is vastly important, right? It affects everybody that hears us, right? If we could look at a projector of ourselves during the day and some of the crap that we say, you know, we would go, oh my God, did I really, you know? So one of the cool things about cycling up that, you know, awakening that snake as it rises is I think about, you know, what did I say to the world in the past? What am I saying to the world now? How might that affect how I speak to the world in the future? This is how we can really change ourselves. Does that make sense to you? This is the cycle of meditation yoga, right? Where we're all, this is mindfulness. It's all about mindfulness, right? That last part of the Four Noble Truths is the mindfulness, right? How we live our lives with this new understanding of what's going on inside of us. So our vocal communications to the world, that throat chakra is very important. And our third eye, this is where, this is like the swords in the tarot, right? Our intelligence, our all of that kind of understanding and wisdom. I'm going to tell you something. It took me a couple of years to get there, but these days in my in the third eye part of my meditations, it gets very powerful. I meditate with my eyes open, and we're looking. Me and the Buddha are looking at right at each other. And there is a transference there. I mean, you can feel it happening, and it's almost like a transfer of information. Many of the words, parts, and even chapters of this book that you read were direct energy transferred through that kind of third eye connection. And then the crown just takes you up to the spirit. So if you think of that whole process, we've gone from the very root of what grounds us in life, which is so important, to the very top of spirit, right? Which elevates us. When we go back to that part we were talking about earlier, of kind of where science in and religions that never can seem to get together in the Kundalini, you know, when we experience and balance all seven of our chakras, we're bringing all of those things together within ourselves, right? What's bigger than that?
Yeah. What is bigger than that? Yeah.
Yeah. I know of nothing. It's a very powerful thing. And all along those lines, you know, those five hindrances and seven helpers, it's really good to know that and what balances, because it's really, you know, if everything is right now, then we're a series, right? We're a series of things coming, things that have arrived with us, and things that are leaving us. I call that in the book a three-dimensional, when we start to see ourselves, I call it dharmic vision, right? This is a three-dimensional prism, right? We see ourselves in this kind of three-dimensional state of impermanence, right? Of everything always moving forward, right? Mm-hmm. We're moving forward, things within us are coming and going and all that kind of stuff. That's how we can find a balance. You know, when you cycle through, one of your chakras is out of balance, believe me, and rarely are those days when everything's all in unison. It's a beautiful thing when they are, but usually you kind of know here, all right, I've got some work to do right here. You know, it can take a day, 2 days, 3 days, a week, 3 months, you know, to get it back in order. But just having the ability to do that is a beautiful thing. That's what meditation is all about. And that's really where this book finishes, which is a basic introduction to that, right? And just helping people to find that.
Yeah. Yeah, you do such a great job. So I'm thankful that you ended with meditation, because it is very important. So, oh, wow. Yeah, thank you for going through some of the questions I had for your book. And yeah, just full of wisdom. And so I'm very, very honored. Thank you so much.
And that is likewise. This is a fabulous conversation. You know, it's a beautiful thing to be able to talk about spiritual things, you know.
Yes.
Real spiritual things.
Yes, I love it. So I know you mentioned that you are putting together a tarot book, and it sounds like another companion book to this one that we're talking about. So can you talk more about that, or other projects that you're working on that you want to reveal?
Yes, I'm torn. Maybe you can help me based on our conversation. I just recently mentioned that kind of dream yoga incident, and I started volume two of this. This is originally meant to be a three-part series, right? And it's called Wheels of the Mind, Volume 2 of Maradon Buddha Rise. And it's going to get very intensely. And I've got kind of a 3D vision of that whole process in meditation that ties in with kind of personal experience. And it's going to be very, That it's going to be a very cool thing, you know, and tie get more into dream yoga and things like that. And then my tarot book is going to it's called Tarot Clarified. I'm about third the way through it. I'm through the sixes right now. I've got to get 7, 8, 9, 10, the knight, queen, king, page, queen, king, and then I've got to do all 22 of the trump cards. But that's flowing like butter because I do readings here at the shop, you know, not daily, but you know, I probably do 5 or 6, 8 readings a week, and it's just what basically what I say in readings, and it's that it's designed to help people, kind of like this book, you know, if you to really understand the tarot, you're always pointed back to the old magic stuff, right? Well, you know, I got like the Eliphaz Levi and that kind of stuff. And, you know, that is all masked, hidden, and for good reason, they would get persecuted and killed if they didn't. But it's almost an impossible matrix to get through and really make any sense out of it. I did it though. You know, there's numerology, there's a lots of things. So I try to get rid of all of that kind of magic mumbo jumbo stuff from the, and just put it in easy kind of terms. And kind of like the, you know, in this, it, you know, if you can know what 1 through 10 represents and the four elements, right? Earth, air, fire, water, actually 5 and spirit, you can go a long way in the tarot, right? It's all about movement. We call the tarot is the journey of the fool, right? It starts out with zero, the fool, the magician, the high priestess, the empress, the emperor, all the way around to, you know, there's these chasms you cross. One is at the chariot, one is at the devil and the tower. And basically we're going from our personal development through the virtues, and then we get to the star, the moon, the sun, and all that. And that's finding our spiritual self. So it's very in tune with this kind of stuff. So one of those two will be the next book, and then one day volume 3 of Mardon on Buddha Rise. So which one should I finish Tarot Clarified or get going with volume 2? What do you think?
Oh gosh. Well, that's hard to say. I work on things all at the same time. So I'm probably not the best person to ask. I do love tarot, but
There you go.
I am interested in the sort of the was it dream yoga? I've never
Yeah, well, let
really
me
heard
tell you.
about that.
Let me give you a teaser, okay? The first 4 pages. Have you ever, Marilee, had a dream where, like, you were falling or something, and you knew you were about to die, right? Right before you hit the ground or whatever happens, you wake up and your heart's racing and beating and all that kind of. Have you had that kind of dream before? What if you had a dream and you didn't wake up before you reached the bottom?
That would be interesting.
That's the first 4 pages of Mardon on Buddha Rise. It's going to be really cool. It's dream yoga is real. After that dream, I found out, and there's you know a line in that book. I've got a reference to it in my book. It's reminding yourself that this is all a dream. Merrily, merrily, life is but a dream, right?
That's right.
And it's when we can overcome certain fears in our dreams, it's very powerful because then that translate to real life. Because we didn't even get into this. I talk about the dream within the dream in the book. This is a huge thing, right? Understanding that samsara is like a dark, heavy dream that we're having inside of this dream, which is our light dream, right? So we're kind of stuck in this dark dream within our main dream, the dream within a dream. But the point of dream yoga is to understand that this really is all a dream. And anytime something, you know, when the stuff hits the fan, understand this is just a dream. It's cool. We're gonna be all right, right? And it's pretty powerful stuff. So
I remember you wrote that in the book, and for some reason I was thinking, 'cause I'm a David Lynch fan, so it made me think about David Lynch and like all of his work, and I was like, that's another rabbit hole. But yeah, 'cause he definitely explores dreams and the concept of like dreams within dreams, what does that mean? And yeah, so a lot of correlations in what you were talking about for sure. Yeah, so I don't know which book, I don't know, honestly. I'm sorry that you have to work on two at the same time, but they both sound really good.
I think it's good. Right now it's volume 2. I'm like you though. It'll go back and forth, but you know, people love the tarot, so I got a feeling I could sell a lot of tarot books. So I
Well,
really
yeah.
want to finish that book. And I'm very passionate about the tarot, right? I tell people I've been reading it for thousands of years. If it lies to us today, please let me know, because I will be free from the, right? It's, I don't know if you've ever done any of that, but reading tarot cards, everybody think, ooh, that'd be so cool. And I always think, I did too, but it's exhausting, man. You get in and you get into people's lives, right?
Yeah.
It's heavy stuff, a lot of tears, a lot. I mean, this is a very personal thing, you know, when we see our lives. I'd say the tarot, I'd say we experience life, right, through, from our soul, through our eyes, to the action in the world happening upon us. It's like tunnel vision. What the tarot does, when we sit down and start, I do a spiral draw, right? What you're doing is you're raising out of that and you're looking down upon your life, right? Almost like you're being raised up to a new level. And a lot of times, really, it's very simple. I call what I do practical tarot, right? It's the first house and second house usually represent. So what's been going on lately? And what's potentially coming up in the future, and how do I cross this chasm, right? When people either have crossed that and it gives them confirmation, they feel great. A lot of times a reading like that happens, and I feel like, should I even, it's like, give this guy money back, right? I mean, what am I telling? But it's that confirmation of understanding that. Other people see, oh my God, this is really what, this is what I think it is, and I've got to make this move, right? My favorite card is the Two of Swords. It's the lady. She's got a blindfold on and she's holding two swords here. Do I go this way or that? Or the Wheel of Fortune, because the next card after that card always reveals something amazing, right?
Yeah.
Tarot is a very cool thing.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to finish Tarot Clarified. I think you helped me. I'm going to do it.
Do it. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Definitely looking forward to anything that you put out, because it's very passionate and very knowledgeable. So very cool.
Well, that's awesome. I hope, it's on Amazon.com it's my first published book, right? So anybody, if you go out and get it, blessings to you and your family for helping us on the journey. And I dream of a day when I can, all I have to do is get up and worry about making jewelry and writing, I still have jobs. So we're a working author. Anybody read the book, please go to Amazon and give me a review. If you like it, if you hate it, go drop it off, I say, at your nearest resale bookstore. Either way is a beautiful thing.
Yeah, perfect. So definitely check out Amazon for your book. Is there anywhere else that you want to direct people to kind of learn more about you and all the things that you do as well?
Our store is called, our little jewelry store, if you're into chakra, tarot, crystals, things like that. Our store is Local Stone. We're in Galveston, Texas. And if you friend us on Facebook or Instagram at Local Stone, I do photos and videos just about every day of jewelry that me and Noel make all day long, and we ship, and much of it has great meaning. And I see one of my thing came loose here, but we do a lot of, we get a lot of crystals in Arkansas. We do a lot of rock hunting in West Texas, Big Bend area, New Mexico. But we just make beautiful stuff. This is my Master of Destiny necklace. It has all six elements of the tarot in it.
Whoa.
The ones in the middle are dark energy and high energy. And then, of course, you can't do better than your big crystal that, it's there's a lot of, and I was never a believer in stones and crystals having energy, but the more, we just made a run to Arkansas about a month and a half ago, and we dug some, we got some little ones, but we also bought some really nice chunky crystals, and we brought them all in the shop and put them on display, and the energy around here just kind of blew up on us. So it is real, there's a lot of people who, it makes people very happy and gives people a lot of good energy. So we're doing a lot of cool stuff with that. And then, any specific questions, or you want me to send this thing to you, scribeworkspublishing@gmail.com. I'm happy to talk to anybody, along those lines.
Perfect. Okay. I do have one question, because you brought up crystals. I love crystals. Mm-hmm. Have you ever tried, because somebody suggested this and I've done it before, where you kind of sit with a crystal and you talk to it? Have you done that?
I have people come in here that do all kinds of things with crystals, right? They'll come rev. Mm-hmm. I've got a selenite crystal ball where I do my tarot readings, mm-hmm. and they'll have to clear it or charge it or whatever.
Right.
Noelle, my better half, she has all, she could tell you all about that. But yeah, there, that is that is like a thing, you know, that that represents a lot of time. I think that, you know, when I'm doing tarot readings, I say that the Trump cards, right, represent what I call forces. Some people call them angels, spirit guides, or whatever. And Noel actually turned me on to this a little bit. And I started thinking about, like, you know, a lot of times those forces that we think are kind of some gods or some, you know, it's our higher selves in the background trying to direct ourselves, right? I believe that connection between those, when you're talking to that, you're talking to your higher self through that crystal. Crystal energy has that kind of transferent, multidimensional thing. And if you look at a lot of important places, I was just hearing some stuff last night, the pyramids at all of these, you know, Chichen Itza, where we visited Quetzalcoatl's pyramid down in Cancun, Mexico, and all that stuff. And you look at ley lines, all of those places where those sacred grounds are, there's a common theme of quartz and limestone that go together. So quartz is a big deal. All those ghost hunters say it's high quartz, right? We're on a high quartz territory. There's lots of ghosts. So there's a lot of paranormal stuff happens. It's always in the mountains where the high quartz is. And man, do we love roaming up around there and digging for crystals in the mountains and stuff like that. It's a lot of great fun. But to answer your question, I believe, yes, I believe that when you're doing that, you're speaking to your higher self, which is a cool thing.
It is cool. Yeah. Wow. That sounds really fun too. Just going and treasure hunting for crystals. So that's really cool.
That's fun. Yeah. Well, the next time we go, our goal is to kind of get out more west. You know, we've been as far as we kind of stopped at New Mexico, but we really want to get to Nevada and Arizona and even up there near you. Y'all got a lot of cool obsidian spots, and there's some and up there in Oregon, there's some cool rainbow agates that we want to get to one day. So maybe we can meet in the middle. We'll meet you at a mountaintop somewhere in Utah and we'll go digging.
That'd be fun. Oh, man. That'd be awesome. Oh, well, thank you so much, Joe. So kind of the final thing we tend to leave with is shared lots of words of wisdom with us, but is there a particular words of wisdom that you would like to leave us with today?
You know, there's a million, but if there's one, if you had to pin me down to one, you know, when we talk about those five hindrances, right? One of those, and we talked a little bit about tonight, is skepticism, right? Open our minds, right? I like to say that my book is a mind opener, right? And to do that, it's a really hard chasm that we talked several times about the difficulty in crossing these chasms to overcome our fear to do that, right? Skepticism is that, you know, kind of what we described earlier, that parent, that teacher, that whatever that was that told you this is the world and this is how you operate in it, right? But I do that, I operate in that world, but I still don't feel good inside. I still have anxiety or fear, or I don't feel it's not what my heart, you know, it's what the world tells me, but my heart tells me something different. When we open our minds to skepticism, when we open our mind to new things, say yes to something we normally say no to, or say no to something we normally say yes to, give that a chance every once in a while, and maybe you'll find out something that can be very mind-opening that you had always said, no, I'll never do that. I'm going to tell you right now, I will never do that. I promise I'll never do that. And then how many years later now you're doing it, did you say?
Yeah, like a year later. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a good thing, right?
Yeah.
That's crossing the chasm of skepticism. That's opening our minds kind of beyond samsara, right? This world that we're conditioned to live in. And it's all a dream, Marilee. This has been a dream, this conversation with you. I've had a blast.
Oh, well, thank you, Joe. Thank you for sharing your wisdom, and thank you for sharing and writing your book and your knowledge about tarot. So many good things. And yeah, I'm just very grateful that we chatted today.
Very beautiful. I'm glad you did. Go give me a good review at Amazon. If you get the book, enjoy it. And it's a beautiful thing. You know, all of us sharing together and learning and growing together. That's the seed within us, right? That we find the seed of Tathagatagarbha. Find it. Light it up. Let's go. The awakening starts now.
Okay. Beautifully said. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It was my pleasure having the delightful Joe Singleton on the show today. Please see the show notes to check out his book, Mara Dawn, Buddha Rise, The Awakening, and to be informed of his next book and all the wonderful projects he is currently involved with. Supporting the Casual Temple is easy. Do like, follow, and subscribe on YouTube or your favorite podcast platform. It really helps us grow. Thank you for listening and being an important part of the Casual Temple.